Good morning. John Munson in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this morning. Arizona recently became the first state in the country to require its high school students to pass the U.S. citizenship exam in order to graduate. Other states are also considering similar measures. We're going to talk about that this hour on the Ideas Network, and we welcome your participation as well. And heads up, there will be a quiz. My guest is Robert Pondicio, Senior Fellow and Vice President for External Affairs at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. He's also a Senior Advisor to Democracy Prep Public Schools, a network of charter schools based in Harlem, which requires its students to pass the citizenship test before graduation. He's also a former fifth grade teacher and the Executive Director of Citizenship First, a civic education advocacy group in Harlem. Robert Pondicio, welcome to the Joy Cardine Show.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
Well, why do you applaud Arizona for passing this law?
Wow. It strikes me as such an incredibly low bar, to be brutally frank about it. I mean, if you've looked at the citizenship test, and maybe it's worth unpacking what that is exactly for folks who are not familiar with it, it's a pretty low bar in terms of the amount that you need to know about, you know, basic American history, civic facts, the organization of the government or whatnot. These are the kind of sort of baby simple questions that Jay Leno, you know, used to ask people walking around on the Tonight Show, and those segments that he did called Jaywalking, and when people didn't know the answer, like, you know, what are the three branches of government, why are there 50 stars on the flag, that kind of thing, you know, it was played for laughs. But, you know, the fact of the matter is a lot of people simply don't know these things. We require would-be naturalized citizens to have this command of basic facts and knowledge about American history and civics. So it just seems to me not too much to ask, frankly, that if you graduate from a K-12 school in the United States, that you should have this absolutely rudimentary command of basic government and civics.
Well, how do we know that students don't already have it?
Great question. The best recent data point I can point to is Xavier University did a study 2 or 3 years ago, and they uncovered that I think the number was literally 97.5% of would-be naturalized citizens who take this test pass it, and it was 2 out of 3 for Americans. And at this point, it's worth unpacking a little bit about how this works. There are 100 questions that a would-be naturalized citizen gets asked. And you can go online and Google this, and you can find out what they are. There's no mystery to what the questions are. They're published and have been known for quite some time.
And the answers.
In order to pass, you have to get 6 out of 10 right, which itself is a very low bar.
Well, I mean, they only get asked 10 questions, and there's 100
right.
questions
10
on the
out
test.
Of 100. That's right.
Right. And they have to get 6 of them correct, and the answers are all online.
Correct.
So anybody could go there and look and just memorize all 100. I mean, it wouldn't be that hard to memorize all 100 questions and the answers.
Well, that's precisely the point that you could memorize all the answers in an afternoon. It's not that difficult. That's actually one of the criticisms of the test, is that this, you know, those who are serious about civic education, I like to think I'm one of them. However, people will say, well, look, this is just a rote memorization test. It really has no value. It's just one more hoop you're asking schools to jump through. My response to that tends to be, look, if you have gotten to the end of a high school education and these questions are not information that you have at the end of your fingertips, as it were, then something has just gone wrong.
How common are, when I was in school and recognized that was a considerable period of time ago,
we won't say
how many years, we had a civics course. It was part of what pretty much everybody who was a senior took a course. It was at least one semester long with civics, and the other half, in my case, was we got a whole semester of economics, which was pretty interesting. Okay,
yeah,
so
we
all had that,
and had the same thing.
Okay, well, I went to school in Wisconsin, and that's what we had. And I know that there are still schools that have them, but how common is it for schools to still teach this, given The shift in emphasis we've seen in public education in this country toward really wanting to push the STEM courses and
right.
a lot of other requirements that schools have to meet, are civics classes kind of getting kicked to the curb because they just don't have time to teach them, or what?
Yeah, it's all of the above. I mean, we could spend an entire hour talking about just this, but civic education in general has become a bit of a backwater in American education. You know, and you've cited some of the factors. I mean, the most basic one is that in our era of more muscular, test-driven accountability, we tend to test, at least at the elementary and middle school ages, grades 3 through 8, only reading, only math. So there has been a very broad phenomenon that we call curriculum narrowing, where anything that is not reading and math is very often, especially in struggling schools, shunted aside. Now, you alluded to STEM classes. For those who don't know the acronym, that's science, technology, engineering, and math, and for economic reasons. A lot of people are concerned that our kids are not getting jobs that are available, that they were not economically competitive in these important fields internationally. So there has been a broad move in the last several decades to really beef up K-12 education in those so-called STEM subjects. So, yeah, civics, which was arguably the defining goal of American education, public education, 150, 200 years ago, has become a little bit of a forgotten subject. Now, there are, in any number of states, I'm not sure what Wisconsin's are, in any number of states there are still civic education graduation requirements, but as you alluded to, they tend to be what we would call seat time. In other words, you have to take and pass a civics class, and that's largely up to states to set what the graduation requirements would be. But if you live in a state that has a civics requirement and you can't pass this, just again off the top of your head, then you have to question the value of that civics class.
Well, you point out in a recent article that you wrote that more than a third of native-born citizens don't reach that 60% passing grade on this 100-question multiple-choice test where all the answers are available. And
correct.
Half of them fail to reach 70%. So clearly, students are struggling in this area.
Yeah, without a doubt. And again, it might be worth knowing what some of these questions are so you could just know, your listeners can know how basic this information is.
And I'm going to toss one out. We have a break coming up for some news headlines. And just before that, I'm going to put some of these questions out there for our audience to try to answer. By the way, as long as we're at it, here's how you get in touch with the Joy Cardine program. You can call in. It is a call-in show. Your participation is always welcome. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. You can send an email, talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org, or you can find the Joy Cardine Show on Facebook and Twitter and leave your comment or question there for my guest, Robert Pondicio. So, it would seem to be this would seem to be a pretty serious problem if we've got a whole bunch of students out there. Well, we've got masses of citizenry who can't pass this test. Why not have everybody pass the test in order to vote? I mean, if we really get serious about it.
Yeah, that realm enters the realm of politics. I think there have been some who would like to put higher barriers to voting. That just looking at this educationally, I'm more comfortable talking about it as an education matter than a political voting matter. But you know, the pushback that you get from people in education tends to be that, look, you know, what we need is not people who can regurgitate a simple a list of facts about the Constitution and civics and government, and that's a fair criticism. That said, it should surprise us if you ostensibly are getting this deeper, more problem-based or critical thinking type civics education and cannot answer a simple question like, what's the capital of your state? Name one state that borders Mexico. Who is the vice president of the United States? These are or at least I think we're right to be skeptical if those who claim, well, our students are getting a more deep education and they can't answer questions at that rudimentary level.
Mm-hmm. 800-642-1234. Do you think you could pass a citizenship test? How would you think you would do? Let me give you a couple of the questions. We're going to go to the news in about a minute. And while the news is on, I want you to honestly try to answer a couple of these questions. No Googling. Okay? Don't Google the answer. But here are a couple of questions from the test. What is the supreme law of the land? That's actually question one on the test under Principles of American Democracy. What is the supreme law of the land? What do we call the first 10 amendments of the Constitution? That's another question. Here's a third one for you to answer during the news break. Name one branch or part of the government. Name one branch or part of the government. Call us with your answers to any of these three questions at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, talk at WPR.org, or find The Joy Cardine Show on Facebook and Twitter. We'll give the answers after the news. Stay tuned. John Munson in for Joy Cardine here on the Ideas Network.
You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Cynthia Schuster, and we're having some technical difficulties, having lost contact a little bit with John Munson. So we will get back to him as soon as we can. In the meantime, we have a number of callers waiting on the line to talk to our guest, Robert Pondicio. He's a senior fellow and vice president for external affairs at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. He's also a senior advisor to Democracy Prep Public Schools, a network of charter schools based in Harlem, which requires its students to pass the citizenship test before graduating. He's a former fifth grade teacher and executive director of Citizenship First, a civic education advocacy group in Harlem. And just before the break, we asked a couple of those questions that are on the citizenship test. We have a few callers calling in with their responses. Let's start with Dan in Toma. Dan, hi. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. I think the supreme law of the land is the Constitution. The three branches of government are executive, judicial, and legislative. And I've forgotten the third question.
And Robert, did he get those right?
Yes, he did. I don't recall what the third question was either. I'm not sure I could hear it going into the break. But the question that I would ask is, you know, do we think this is too much to know if you're a graduate of an American school? I mean, frankly, not even high school, but I would argue elementary or middle school. And if the answer, or one thing to consider is, how would you feel about graduates who can't answer these fairly simple questions?
Well, I grew up during the 50s. And I can't help but recall the space program and some of the fantastic scientific and technological achievements that came about during that period of time and by people who were educated during that period of time, who were taught civics and economics and social studies as an integral part of their elementary education. And I don't think anybody should be able to graduate from high school in this country without knowing the fundamentals of citizenship.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I would add that it's, you know, it's important to differentiate between the kind of the deeper civic engagement that we hope for all of our students, but the argument, I find it hard to argue that you can have that deeper level of civic engagement in our society without knowing just a handful of few basic facts. It strikes me as a classic false dichotomy, the kind of thing that we frankly do in education all the time.
Thanks for that call, Dan. And I also have to admit, I don't remember what that third question was because I was getting ready for that break behind the scenes here. But if you remember, you can call in at 800-642-1234 along with your questions or comments about this prospect of requiring high school students to pass the U.S. citizenship test in order to graduate. We'd love your comments on how important it is to know your basic American civics at 800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Clarence in Watertown is on the line, and he also wanted to answer some of these questions, so perhaps he can fill us in. Hi, Clarence.
Good morning. Good morning. Yes, I am 66. We went through a freshman civics class. It was a year-long civics class at Brookhill School, and we studied the entire government, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, legislative, executive, and judicial. We studied about the checks and balances. why, you know, representatives are apportioned on population and senators are elected to office by the states, thus giving a balance between the more populous and the less populous states. And thank you, Sister Mary Ewald. I am, like I said, I'm 66, and I remember everything. We learned the difference between term insurance, the different, you know, 20-pay life insurance, full life insurance. We learned all that in civics class.
Yeah, or maybe the economics portion as well. John was speaking earlier that a lot of states still require economics and civics. I believe New York still has that requirement. I think many other states do as well.
We have a business. We have a dairy, and I'm surprised at the number of high school and even college age workers, people that we have that have no idea of how the government functions.
Yeah, I agree with you. And look, you know, this is a little bit of a history lesson here. It's interesting to note now, you know, when you hear politicians these days talking about the goals of American education, how often do you hear the phrase college and career readiness? It's become a bit of a mantra. I like to point out that this would have been quite a surprise to folks like Horace Mann or some of the founding fathers like Benjamin Rush and Noah Webster, who were not thinking about the private dimension of education at all in the early days of the Republic. They were thinking about the public dimension of education. You know, I like to point out that historically speaking, a republic has been a bit of a long shot. And remember the famous story about Benjamin Franklin leaving the Constitutional Convention when a woman asked him, well, doctor, what have we got? And he said, a republic, madam, if you can keep it. It was so the founding purpose, as it were, of American education was really to educate you know, citizens to be capable of self-government in this thing called a democracy, in this thing called a republic. We take that for granted now, but that's I'm not sure that we should. If you look at the national data, you know, we like to talk about the crisis in reading and math when one-third to one-half of our kids score basic on the National Assessment of Educational Progress. But if you look at the civics scores among eighth graders, it's fewer than one out of five who score proficient on civics. So we have really, really strayed a long, long way from the founding purpose of American education, which was really to prepare citizens for self-government.
Thanks for that call, Clarence. And if you want to join the conversation, our phone number again is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. I'm Cynthia Schuster, just jumping in here, but we've got John Munson back on the line, so I'm going to put him back on the air. He is our illustrious host here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Yeah, Cynthia, I could have just gone home and gone back to bed. But, okay, thanks for jumping in. You know, I'll just quote Captain Scott, the fancier they make the plumbing, the easier it is to stop up the drains. One of the questions I have is when you talk to teachers, and I'm married to a retired teacher and my daughter's a fifth grade teacher, and I'm not going to quote them, but one of the frustrations that a lot of teachers have had is, you know, where we continually try to stuff 10 pounds of rocks into a 5-pound sack. So if we want to reemphasize civics and actually teach students something rather than just having them memorize the answers to a test, what do we stop doing? What's on the stop doing list? If we want to add this to the curriculum, what do we take out? What would your suggestion be, Robert Pondicio?
Between the base level of civic knowledge implied in this citizenship test and our larger goals that we were alluding to earlier about civic engagement and the purpose of education. Look, it's a very fair question. I mean, I still maintain that the civics test or the citizenship test, while not sufficient, and I want to be clear about that, I am not at all suggesting that if kids can pass this fairly simple test, then all will be well in terms of civic education. What I'm advocating for is really getting schools back into the business of teaching civics at all, and this strikes me as a way to establish an absolute rock-bottom floor. So that's why, even though many folks who are serious about civic education are kind of dismissive of this initiative, I think it's a good place to start. But in terms of you know, what to leave out, it's a complicated question. I think a lot of mischief is implied in the way we hold schools accountable right now. I was a fifth grade teacher for many years as well, and we lived and died by the New York State reading and math test. So it should surprise absolutely nobody that if you hold schools and teachers accountable for kids passing reading and math, that they are going to do spend all their time doing what? Teaching, reading, and math. Now, you know, I have a background in literacy, and this gets complicated, perhaps a subject for another day, but one of the great misnomers or misapprehensions that we have about teaching reading is that you can teach it, teach reading comprehension as a skill. This is not so. So for complicated cognitive reasons, the more facts and knowledge you have about your culture, your broader society, the better you're going to score in a reading test. So it's not a question, I would argue, of what do we leave out. If a K-12 education is a good classic liberal arts education that includes science and history and civics and government and art and music and all these other things, we'll be accomplishing two things. We'll be making more room in that sack that your daughter complains about, and we'll be improving our reading scores at the same time.
Okay, but liberal education is not popular right now. I mean, when we look at, for example, what happens with university funding, our university here in the state of Wisconsin is being told it needs to prepare people to go to work. And, you know, kind of the suggestion is, you know, you need to forget all this other stuff and teach people how to find a job. And that's trickling down. That's been prevalent even in high schools, even in middle school. The whole point of all of this is not to prepare citizens. It's to get people to prepare people for lucrative careers in fill in the blank field, particularly engineering and science.
Yeah, I think that's a broad misunderstanding of how we actually become competent in these things. You know, my guru in the education world is a guy that some of your listeners may know by the name of E.D. Hirsch, who 30 years ago wrote this interesting little book called Cultural Literacy that made a lot of these points, that we have really narrowed the curriculum to an unholy degree in our country, and as a result, we've done two bad things. One, we are damaging education, and the goal we're trying to serve, preparing students for whether it's to read or function in democracy, is being damaged at the same time. So it really is not an either or. It's if you want to prepare for whether it's college, career, citizenship, if you want to prepare students for an independent life, either as citizens or as workers, about the best thing that you can give kids, especially in the early years, is a rich, broad education. That sounds counterintuitive, but it really is what happens. That's where language growth comes from. That's where vocabulary growth comes from. All of the good things that we say we want for education, creative thinking, problem solving, independent-mindedness, creativity, etc. These are really all a function of they're not skills, shall we say. They're not skills that you can practice or master in the abstract. They really are a function of your broad education.
Well, someone needs to tell various state legislatures around the country then, because that's not what school districts are hearing from them.
Oh, yeah,
that's the problem, because the people who control the money also control the curriculum.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We are engaged right now in this country in a broad battle, including in Wisconsin. I know I've been on radio stations in Wisconsin quite a lot talking about Common Core state standards. And one of the reasons I like Common Core is because it really does, if you read what the standards say and you get beyond the political arguments, it really does call for restoring American education to this more liberal arts idea where you're going to encourage kids to read broadly across subject areas, which is something we've largely gotten away from in this country. And that has become a bit of a political football for reasons that have nothing to do with the standards themselves. But one of the reasons I'm a fan of the Common Core is it does encourage this much richer view of education.
Well, you won't get arguments from me. I'm a history political science major, so... anyway, here's we're going to take another break and check the news, and hopefully that won't curse me again and cause my audio to go away. But here's another couple of questions from the citizenship test, and we'll see if you can pass them. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Here is I think this is a good question. It might trip some people up, maybe not. What is one responsibility that is only for United States citizens? What is one responsibility that is only for U.S. citizens? Answer that question, please, at 800-642-1234. I'll give you a few minutes on that one because I once again read the clock wrong. Here's another question that's on this 100 question citizenship citizenship question, or test rather, and it's related to the one that I just gave you. Name one right only for United States citizens. So name a responsibility that is only for U.S. citizens, and then name one right that is only for United States citizens. You can do that at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Let's take a quick call before we go to the news from Keith in Beaver Dam. Keith, good morning.
Right. I'm not going to be able to answer your questions, but I did have a, I think high school students should pass the civics test. And also, I was very fortunate to have a civics teacher in junior high that taught me representative government. And I asked her what we need that for. Well, she said, well, when the country was founded, everything was horse travel. We don't have time to everybody ride a horse and go vote on stuff. Which leads me to the question to your guest, is representative government outdated since we have the technology now and the power to take it away from the few that are in Washington and, you know, to vote on money issues, issues of war? It'd be very hard for the powerful to control a few people, and the people would actually have the power and control the government. So
Kevin, Keith, rather, I'm going to have to cut you there because we're getting close to news time. I want to give our guests a chance to respond. We've got about a minute until we have to launch into another break here.
Yeah, I'm not going to attempt to answer the political wisdom of that setup, but let me respond this way. How would you feel about entrusting such decisions to your fellow citizens who could not demonstrate this absolutely rudimentary level of civic knowledge? That would make me give me no end of sleepless nights.
Well, and how would you feel about entrusting it to folks who may only get their news from the Internet? God knows what that's all like.
yeah.
But, you know, again, we come back to the question of how do we actually implement this in a way that makes sense for the classroom and inculcates our students with the knowledge that they need to be good citizens. There are some very practical issues here. And what I would like to hear from our callers, maybe some educators, how would you approach this? And if you teach a civics course in your school, how are you approaching it now? Would your students pass this 100-question test? And do you think that we should be administering it to all high school seniors as a graduation requirement? Robert Pondesio is my guest this hour on the Joy Cardine program. He's Senior Fellow and Vice President for External Affairs at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. He's also Senior Advisor to Democracy Prep Public Schools, a network of charter schools based in Harlem. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the Joy Cardine Show, talking about administering civics tests as graduation requirements. Want to know what you think? 800-642-1234. Stick around. I'll try to. Robert Pondesio is my guest this hour. We're talking about adding a high school graduation requirement of a citizenship exam. You have to get at least 60% in order to get your high school diploma. Arizona recently became the first state in the country to make this requirement, and other states are considering it. And we're talking with Robert Pondesio, who is a senior fellow and vice president for external affairs at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, also talking with you as well. At 800-642-1234. And before the break, I tossed out a couple more questions from the citizenship exam. And these are two that, you know, when I looked at them, if I hadn't thought about it before, they could be a little tricky. What is one responsibility that is only for United States citizens? And here's the second question that's similar. Name one right only for United States citizens. Call and see if you can answer those questions without Googling them. 800-642-1234. So before the break, Robert Pondesio, we were talking maybe about some of the more practical aspects of adding this type of thing to our curriculum? Because if we don't want it to just be rote memorization, I mean, because anybody can go look up this test and memorize those, and especially people who are young enough to still have that faculty. I need scripts these days. But, you know, it's if we don't want this to just be rote memorization, we need to have some practical ways to get this infused into the curriculum again. It certainly used to be there. How do we go about that?
Yeah, again, that's a state-by-state decision, and the curriculum for state civic requirements is set at the state level or the local level. I do believe that more than half, of U.S. states still have a civic graduation requirement, but few. The question is what gets tested, as it were. So that I'm less fuzzy or less precise on. In terms of how I do it in my classroom, I mean, you mentioned earlier that Democracy Prep, which is a collection of charter schools here in New York City, where I'm speaking to you from this morning, this has been a graduation requirement for us from the get-go. Because we do take seriously this idea of preparing students not just for college and career, but for citizenship. So we actually administered this test for the second time this year on January 30th, the week before last. And we set the bar, frankly, a lot higher than if you were going to take the actual citizenship test as a would-be naturalized citizen. Again, the way that works is there's these 100 questions. The examiner asks you 10 orally. If you get 6 or more, you pass. We do it as a written exam. We ask 40 of the questions at random, and we set the bar for passing not at 60%, but at 83%. And then to add yet a further complication, you have to take the test at least twice and pass with 83%. We administer it at the end of each trimester, so 3 times. You have to pass it twice at 83% level in order to graduate. There has never been a student in Democracy Prep who failed to meet this fairly low bar. Now, granted, we've only graduated 2 or 3 classes of high school students, but even so, nobody has failed to meet this bar.
So how do we make civics more interesting to students who otherwise find social studies boring?
Boy, I don't know. Like you, I teach history and civics, so I find this stuff fascinating. I think that's just a function of good teaching. This I will acknowledge, is one of the downsides of the citizenship test. Folks like Peter Levine at Tufts University, who I respect and admire greatly, are dismissive of this test because they don't want to see civics become merely an exercise in rote memorization. And I'm deeply sympathetic to that. I think that's about the last thing we would want. As I said earlier, this to me is a way to get schools and districts and states back into the game of teaching civics at all. But, you know, should we want for our children a much more engaging civic education experience where they're doing projects and whatnot and engaging deeply with this material? Yeah, of course. But let's not pretend that if you do that you're not going to have a rub-off effect of learning some basic facts and information about the way that we structure our government. Again, at Democracy Prep, one of the things that we do that I'm very fond of, we have our seniors engage in a year-long what we call Change the World project, where they take on an issue and get engaged in some advocacy work around an issue that they're passionate about. Now, they also have a fairly rich background in civics and history coming in, you know, starting in middle school and up to and through it, including high school. So as a result, this particular test that we're talking about is not a great challenge. Sure, you know, the night before, some of them may, like any of us would, spend a few minutes brushing up on some basic facts and knowledge. But those two goals, a deep, rich civic engage, an education that encourages civic engagement and passing this test, are in no way mutually exclusive.
Let's take a call from Kenneth in Poinette, who has the answers to the questions I just asked, or I asked earlier. Kenneth, go ahead.
Good morning. Very interesting show. The responsibility of the citizens is to get out and vote, and the one right that we all have is freedom of speech.
Well, you got the first one spot on. The second one, the name, it says name one right for only United States citizens, according to, and there probably are answers that aren't on here. I think these are the two that they want. You can one right only for U.S. citizens. You could have said vote in a federal election or run for federal office. But Kenneth, thanks for playing our quiz. We have no prizes. So you win the good feeling of knowing that you were right. I guess. 800-642.
I think those two questions are really poorly worded for what it's worth, even though I'm a defender of this test. I think it should say something that what is one responsibility or one right that U.S. citizens are eligible for example. That, you know, because obviously if you're, we all have freedom of speech. Nobody's going to prosecute a non-citizen for a speech violation, as it were. But yeah, if you're not a United States citizen, then you cannot vote in a federal election. You cannot run for federal office. I just think that's a very poorly worded question.
Yeah, well, there are a number of these that I thought were a little awkwardly stated. I just want to clarify when we say that those who are seeking to pass the citizenship test to actually become citizens, there are 100 questions. We want to emphasize that when they only have to answer 6 out of 10, those are randomly chosen 10 questions. So they really have to know the answers to all 100 questions because they have no way of knowing in advance which 10 questions they're going to be asked.
Correct.
Somebody gets it. Well, gosh, they only have to answer 10 questions, you know. Yeah.
Right. Some of these questions are arguably, you know, trivial pursuit. Like when Xavier University did their study a few years ago, they actually broke down question by question the right and wrong answers. And one of the questions only got a 7% correct response, and that was how many amendments does the Constitution have? Now, you know, you could argue, and another one was name one of the authors of the Federalist Paper. Things like this, you could argue are really, you know, do get into the realm of trivial pursuit. It's probably, I'm more concerned as a teacher that my kids understand what the Federalist Papers were and what they said than being able to name one of the authors. But there again, that said, if you've studied the Federalist Papers and you're conversant in them, it strains my credulity that you're not going to be able to name at least one of the authors.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones. Kathy is with us from West Bend. Kathy, thanks for being here today.
You're welcome. I understand that this test is for a high school graduation requirement, but what's to prevent it from morphing into the kinds of requirements we used to have in parts of this country that in order to vote, one needed to pass a test. It's not that long ago that it was a requirement that if you were black in the South, well, if you were anyone in the South, you had to take a test, but there was a separate list wherein the black person would have to have a more, would have a more harsh test. And what do you do about kids that aren't U.S. citizens who are in our public schools? If they're a resident alien, in order to graduate, if they don't pass the test, can they still, you know, be a graduate? Thank you.
Well, we talked about that first part, and that's a political question that really we weren't going to really get into too much. But what about the second one? What happens when there are non-citizens in the class and they're graduating? If they pass this test, should they become citizens then?
Oh, I see. I didn't understand that was the question. I thought it was, should you have different graduation requirements, one for citizens, one for resident aliens, and I would argue.
Well, let's deal with that first, but then I want to take it to the other part, you know, if they pass the test.
That's a great question. I mean, there's more to applying for citizenship and receiving naturalization than merely passing this test, but would I count this as proof that you have passed the civics portion of the naturalization requirement? Yeah, sure. Why make them do it twice?
So are there you closed your piece that was the genesis for this program by saying that there are bigger fish to fry in American education, but this citizenship requirement is a start. What would you say is our biggest fish to fry?
No, I mean, I think you cannot look, as I do every day, at the state of American education and think that we can be complacent. All these things we discussed earlier about educating kids for college and career in STEM fields and reading and math, I hate to set one goal in competition with the others. You know, but clearly we need an education system that can walk and chew gum at the same time, and it doesn't do much for one's confidence, at least not mine, if you see 2 out of 3 of our 18 to 34 year olds cannot pass this absolutely rudimentary level of civic knowledge, that kind of test. So this simply is not too much to ask. And while I get the criticism that you're asking, you know, yet putting one more test or one more barrier in front of students because it is such a low bar, I think it should really kind of strike at our confidence if our kids can't do this already, and if putting this requirement in place is the type of thing that encourages our schools to be a little bit more rigorous about civics and citizenship, then I simply cannot get my head around how that can be a bad thing.
Well, I'm imagining someone saying, yeah, but how's this going to help them get a job? Because that seems to be mainly what we care about in education these days. But citizenship, certainly a worthy topic for discussion. Robert Pondicio, thank you for being here with us today. I really appreciate you getting up at this hour and joining us on the Joy Cardine program.
My pleasure, John. Thanks for having me.
This program was produced by Bill Martins, on-air production this morning by Cheryl Gasser, and Cynthia Schuster was my director. Hey, thanks for hanging in there with all our technical issues. We hope to avoid any more of that sort of thing the rest of the day here. More to come on the Joy Cardine program. It's the State Capitol Report coming up next. Sean Johnson joins me after the news, and we'll take a further look at Governor Walker's budget and the reaction to it in the state legislature and elsewhere. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.